Welcome to Panelcast, Forbidden Panels podcast featuring comic books, video games, and movie news and reviews. And now, your host, AJ Herrera.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to episode 142 of the Panelcast. I'm your host, AJ, and with me, as always, is Anthony.
Yep, back again.
In this episode, we have no idea what to talk about, so we're just going to make stuff up on the fly. I'm just kidding. But I'll be reviewing the other book that Ernest Cline did, called Armada, while Anthony gives us a lowdown on his experiences at the New York Comic Con. All this, maybe more, maybe less, who knows, we'll see, after this first initial break.
Hi, this is Rosie from Rosie's Reading Corner. Check out my blog at ForbiddenPanel.com and discover new, and some not-so-new, graphic novels, manga, and other geeky reads along with me.
Welcome back, everybody. It's time again for our news segment. I will toss it over to AJ and let him take it away. What have you got?
So, as many of you people know, yesterday was the final reveal of the third trailer for Star Wars The Force Awakens. I know Anthony didn't get a chance to watch it because he's trying to remain spoiler-free, which I commend him for. At the same time, I curse him for because I can't geek out with him about it. Damn you, Anthony. Immediately after the release of the trailer, though, ticket sales for Episode 7 went online. Well, I don't know about you guys, but I know Auntie and I sure had a hell of a problem trying to buy them damn tickets. Websites like Fandango, MoviePhone, MovieTickets.com, even Regal and AMC all crashed immediately after ticket sales went online. They were bombarded with so many sales that they actually surpassed other sales records. Pre-sales broke every IMAX record out there, generating more than 6.5 million in domestic ticket sales across 390 IMAX screens in North America. IMAX has never previously registered more than 1 million in pre-sales on a single day. Fandango reports that they had a record-setting first day and sold 8 times as many tickets as it did in the first day of sales for previous record holder, the first Hunger Games movie. MovieTickets.com says sales were 3 times higher than any point in the company's 15 years history, and 4 times higher than pre-sales for Star Wars Episode 3 Revenge of the Sith in the same period. Probably because everybody and their mother went to Fandango first, and when it started crashing, they started finding alternate websites like myself. AMC says The Force Awakens beat the previous record holder by more than tenfold, and have already sold out more than 1,000 shows nationwide. I don't know what you guys are thinking, but this is Star Wars. It's been a decade. No shit, your stuff crashed. A lot of sites even started releasing ticket sales 2 to 3 hours before they were supposed to. And a couple of theaters offered ticket sales when you went up to the ticket booth to purchase as early as when they opened up that morning, when they weren't supposed to. I personally ended up purchasing about, I'd say, a total of 6 tickets one way or another from different websites just in case we couldn't get into the ticket or viewing that we wanted to. I even drove down to our local theater and asked to purchase tickets there. However, they then informed me that not only was their website down, but their kiosk system had crashed immediately, apparently working off the same servers as their website online ticket sales do. Again, it's Star Wars, people.
Star Wars has been religion for what? What, 30, 40 years now?
Yep.
It is a religion. No, it's not just, you know, a film franchise. Star Wars is religion for millions of people worldwide.
And what's funny is there are already people, you know, bitching and complaining about certain aspects of the trailer that had come out, which for me holds no credence. Predominantly, the main complaint that I've seen online has been that there's a black main character. You guys are retarded. Hello, Lando Calrissian. Hello, Darth Vader being voiced by James Earl Jones. Hello, you guys are stupid. Really.
Is the Star Wars universe really supposed to be that small?
And just, come on. Just because Luke is a desert farm boy, the poster child, Hitler poster child, doesn't mean anything. Like, you guys are ridiculous. And obviously, it didn't matter to you that much, because the minute you saw the trailer, you went online and bought the fucking tickets anyway, right? In town, in our local area, in the Inland Empire, where Anthony and I currently reside, ticket sales for the opening day, which there is a showing every single hour, in every single theater, in every single stadium or auditorium that they have, from 7 p.m. until midnight, has sold out within the first hour of ticket sales. Luckily, Anthony and I are cool, and we got in at 7 p.m., so we're cool.
We're good to go. Yep, we're good.
But I am not surprised by any of this stuff. I fully expected it, which is why I was online early, hitting the F5 button as much as I can, trying to get ready for the ticket sales, because I wanted to be sure I got the tickets for the screening and the showing that I really wanted. So, having said that, you can expect us to probably do a live broadcast on December 17th from the lines of the Star Wars Force Awakens showing, only because we'll probably be there for like at least 12 hours beforehand and have nothing else to do.
Yeah, yeah, that's highly probable.
More than likely.
All right, what else have you got?
One of my favorite shows, something I haven't held back in talking amazing stuff about, is Gotham. I loved season one. I thought it did a great job. I was recently informed by a friend of mine who is an artist that is working for us, who had not seen season one, but somehow during our trip to Phoenix, I had managed to convince him. He decided to sit down and watch season one as well, and immediately started geeking out about it with me yesterday. And we spent a good couple hours on the phone. But our main complaints were that there's not enough small villains. Like, they're bringing out the Joker too soon. You know, they're bringing all this stuff out too soon. I really wish that they would hold back just a little bit. I'm not in the mood to see Bat-Teen. And it just feels like the pacing of everything might just lead us there. And I'd even mentioned, you know, the smaller criminal element, that it'd be kind of cool to see that. Well, immediately after the conversation with my friend Joey, came the fifth episode of the second season of Gotham, which introduced the female character Firefly, this time giving us a villain character in full costume as well. But it was another revelation, one to do with that of long season antagonist Theo Gallivan, that has gotten everybody just chatting away. I'm guessing you have not seen the episode yet, Anthony?
No, I have not.
Well, spoiler alert for those of you who haven't seen it. There's a flashback in this episode of the Waynes and the Dumas and a whole bunch of other families gathering together in the late 1800s for a dinner and tradition and having discussions about the future of what they want Gotham to hold. Hello, Order of the Owls.
Yeah.
Also mentioning that the main bad guy this season, his original name was Dumas. Well, for those of you who don't know, the Order of Saint Dumas is also the order that put out Azrael. So, I'm geeking out hardcore.
Yeah, it sounds like the inclusion of, well, they had to start including some of the smaller villains, some of the other elements of Gotham's underworld. Otherwise, they were going to run out of stuff real fast. Because Gotham, I know in the first season, they covered a whole lot of ground as far as major Batman villains and just bringing in the backstory and everything about how Bruce comes to be Batman. So what are you going to do? You got to bring in all the cool stuff, right? There are all the little pieces you got to bring up for all the longtime fans so that they can be like, yes, I needed this.
Exactly. And like I said, I'm the small villains is what I want to see. Firefly, awesome. Zazz has been one of the best parts of Gotham, in my opinion. Every time he pops up, his psychotic nature and everything about him, I'm just loving it. So, you know, I'm just hoping they don't rush too much. You know, I just want them to take it slow. It's a procedural cop show at the end of the day. You know?
Yeah.
And for those of you that read Gotham Central, you'll understand that there is potential for a lot of story there.
Yeah, it is more focused on that than on the whole supervillain element. And they've done a really good job with it so far. Hopefully they can keep it going, they can keep it rolling. I'm going to take over right now just to vent on something. And I don't know how many of you out there are fans. I used to be. At one time I really was. But filming has officially begun on a fifth installment to the Underworld franchise. You know, Kate Beckinsale really does look great in skin-tight pants, but the film franchise itself has kind of lost me. And a fifth film, after the fiasco that was the last film, just royally scares me. But I will give you the blurb anyway. Kate Beckinsale returns as Celine, alongside her fourth film co-star Theo James as David. Joining them are Tobias Menzies as a formidable new Lycan leader, Laura Pulver as a fiercely ambitious vampire, and Charles Dance as vampire elder Thomas. That's all we really got, but filming has started in Czechoslovakia, well, Czech Republic, and it's underway. I can't even hope on this one. I just can't.
Well, at least Charles Dance is in it.
Yeah, I know, but this makes five films in a franchise out of which two were enjoyable. Two, which means they've screwed it up as many times as they've got it even remotely right.
You know, Kevin Grivix needs money too.
Well, yeah, everybody needs money. That's fine. Stop. Just stop. You know what? I'm a fan of the lore of both vampires and werewolves, and they're just fucking it up royal. So, and it just keeps getting worse. They keep going to weirder and just more fucked up places with it, and I can't. No.
I mean, this is a series that can't even afford to film in daylight. Everything is so dark tones there. The original co-star of the film bounced after the second movie, you know, and has become a myth throughout. Even the fourth movie was supposed to have him in it. They were chasing him down. All you saw was his ass and hair. He wasn't even in it.
Nope.
You know? And, yeah, I agree with you. They're beating a dead horse. They're Resident Evil, this movie. That's what they're doing. This franchise. Yeah. They're making it the new Resident Evil.
But, okay, you know what? I'm going to let it go. I'm going to let it go. Maybe, what have you got? Bring me some happy thoughts. Something.
I have no happy thoughts.
Aw.
For those of you who haven't heard yet, last week there came a big reveal last week of not one, but two X-Men-related live-action TV series in the works. Fox's Hellfire and FX's Legion. For those of you who are not aware of it, you may have gotten a glimpse of Hellfire during X-Men, the first one with the kids. I can't even think of it. X-Men First Class. I said it in the name. The Hellfire Club was the club that Kevin Bacon was in charge of. Now, the TV series is going to focus mostly on the club, set in the late 1960s. The series will follow a young special agent who learns that a power-hungry woman with extraordinary abilities is working with a clandestine society of millionaires known as the Hellfire Club to take over the world. It's not specified if the X-Men universe will tie in with this series, but since both the film series are being produced by Fox, there's a good chance we're going to see something. And that's just it on the Hellfire side. For those of you who don't know what Legion is, Legion had his own series for a while, and he was like one of my favorite comic book characters. He is the son of Professor Charles Xavier. The story will follow a troubled young man named David Haller, who may be more than human. Since he was a teenager, he has struggled with mental illness. Soon after a strange encounter with fellow patient, though, he's confronted with the possibility that the voices he hears and the visions he sees might be real. Now, for those of you who didn't bother to pick up the recent comic book release of this story, it was really good. Whereas David Haller had multiple personalities, but they were all trapped in his mind. and he would just go in and switch places with the personality depending on what he needed out of that personality. Now, also understand that these different personalities had different powers, and David Haller had access to all of those when he became those personalities. So he is like a hub of supernatural mutant powers all residing in his mind, and all he has to do is tap into one whenever he needs it. It also makes him kind of crazy.
Only kind of.
So the recent comic book series is really good. I'm interested to see how they're going to do it with the on TV. I've always said comic books would be better on a TV network, provided that you're allowed to show the things that they can. Constantine, as much as we loved it, you know, it didn't last because nobody else did. So hopefully one of these two series will last. I'm not a big fan of the Hellfire Club per se, but I'm a big X-Men dork, so, you know, I'll watch it if it's
I'll give it a shot, but it's one of those things that's like, okay, how much are we actually going to be able to get out of this, and are you just kind of milking it for comic book properties to turn into something at this point? I'm not diminishing the Hellfire Club in and of itself, but it really seems that when studios right now are like, well, we can't come up with programming, let's go find something comic book related and see if we can make it stick.
Because right now, comic books are all the rage on TV. DC's doing it. Why don't Marvel do it?
Yeah. So I will hold out hope more for Legion than for the Hellfire Club, but I, as the comic book geek that I am, I will have to give both of them a valid shot, assuming that the networks do them any justice and don't slot them into horrible time slots up against well-established shows that are going to automatically kill their ratings or shuffle them around partway through their seasons or any of the other things that, well, Fox, particularly Fox, has been known for doing to kill a show before it ever gets off the ground.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe we'll... I'm not even going to go there.
Okay, but where are you going to go after that one?
After that one, I don't know if it's good news or bad news. I just know that it's news, and it's something, once again, that I have been saying that we should be doing for a while now. After the news release of Hellfire, as well as Legion, FX decided to go ahead and publish out the fact that they're going to be developing an ongoing TV series adaptation of Brian K. Vaughan's beloved sci-fi comic, Why the Last Man. Yay! It's on FX, so there's probably a lot we're not going to be able to see. But, for those of you who don't know, the 60-issue comic follows young amateur escape artist York Brown and his pet monkey Ampersand, the last two men on Earth. Something simultaneously kills every mammal on Earth possessing a Y chromosome, including embryos, fertilized eggs, and even sperm. Society is then plunged into chaos as infrastructures collapse, and the surviving women everywhere try to cope with the loss of the men. York goes on a mission to find his girlfriend Beth, who is on vacation in Australia. Now, as been reported many a times here on this podcast, a ton of attempts have been made for years to adapt the property as a movie. DJ Caruso, Louis Leterrier, and Dan Trachtenberg were previously attached as directors, with Shia LaBeouf and Alicia Keys being linked as stars to earlier versions. It's taken a while for the TV series plan to move forward, as FX has had to wait until the rights to the series reverted back from New Line to Vaughn. Beginning immediately, a search is now underway to find a writer to develop the series with Vaughn, along with the director for the pilot. If they don't fuck it up, this could be one of the coolest TV shows ever.
It could, and I absolutely love this comic. It's one of my all-time favorites. I think it sits definitely in my top 10, possibly in my top 5.
It's one of everybody's all-time favorites.
So it's like, I'm excited that it seems like there's actually progress now. Someone's taking it and they're like, all right, we're actually going to do something with this, and it looks like it might be moving forward. I am freaking terrified that they might screw it up.
Right. And right now the team to beat seems to be like the Seth Rogen team. I mean, these guys recently got rights to do The Preacher. Apparently, they're finished filming on that. And they've now moved on to trying to adaptate the Boys, which is another Garth Ennis comic book series onto the same thing. So I'm surprised that they didn't latch on to Why the Last Man to try and get it done as well. But maybe because Why the Last Man is a little bit more cleaner than Preacher or The Boys that they had no interest in. So having said that, like, we've all read the books. We know there's not really a lot of over-the-top violence or senseless sex acts or anything like that. It's just really good storytelling. So if they do it right and they have the good budget, there's a good chance that they can pull it off.
It is fantastic dramatic storytelling. It really is. It's character-driven dramatic storytelling. I don't know. I'm going to hold out hope. I'm going to hold on to that hope. I'm going to count that as good news. Happy thoughts. Happy thoughts.
And that's all we have for the news segment.
All right. So that wraps us up for news this time around. We'll be back with you with reviews on, well, New York Comic Con for me and
Armada for me.
Right after this break.
Hi, this is Justin White with Necrosapien Press. Why don't you come down and check out the website at necrosapien.net. You can see all my latest artwork and projects, and we'll have a store up soon where you can buy prints of my art. Thanks.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the panel cast. Did I scare you? I hope I scared you. That was my objective. So this is the review section of the panel cast, and let me allow Anthony to please. Take it first.
Yeah. I will. Sure. Why not? Well, I made the long ass trip cross country to attend New York Comic Con 2015. Now, a couple of caveats. This was my 7th convention of the year since, what, April when we started? March, April, whatever. So, yeah, you got to take it with a little bit of a grain of salt on that one. And there was the glitch about the fact that I drove up the Eastern Seaboard from South Carolina to New York prior to this convention. But I have to say, it was actually worth it. New York Comic Con was a heck of a lot of fun. There were a lot more people than I was expecting. So, let's see. Smaller than San Diego, bigger than WonderCon. Somewhere in between. Closer to San Diego size than WonderCon size. But the major studios, they all turned out. They were showing stuff off, new trailers, pilots for upcoming TV shows, all manner of things. There was one event that I really wanted to get to that I just missed out on because, well, I wasn't going to stand in the convention center from, well, stand outside the convention center from 7 in the morning until 8 to get in, and then from 8 until God knows when to get a wristband, and then line back up 3 hours before the panel, but there was a Firefly reunion, so, you know, that would have been cool. As far as the convention itself, I was there Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I skipped out Sunday because I had to drive back down the Eastern Seaboard. But I attended a bunch of panels, a few related to products that Sci-Fi is premiering, shows like The Expanse and Hunters, and a couple other things. I sat in on a couple of DC Comics panels, and, well, there wasn't really much of anything in the way of news that I got out of those panels, just where current story arcs are going, that kind of thing, the state of Superman and his powers, and where the Flash's current story arc is going. But all in all, it was a hell of a fun ride. Lots of people. Anxiety meds are helpful. Headphones are even better. And prices inside the convention center, let's see. I'm trying to think if they were worse than San Diego. I don't know. A couple of hot dogs and a can of Coke was like $15.
Which is still ridiculous to me. I mean, movie theater we go to is cheaper than that.
Yeah, I know. But it's inside a convention center and you're kind of stuck. So they can charge you, well, an arm and a leg. And they do. And yeah, it was just a fun ride. It was a good time.
How was the location?
The location, that was the Javits Convention Center in right downtown, right in the middle of downtown.
Downtown Manhattan, downtown New York City.
Downtown Times Square is Manhattan, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, downtown Manhattan, as in one, two, three, about four city blocks from Times Square. The location was actually pretty solid. It was the convention center was more than large enough to house the convention as it is. If it continues to grow in upcoming years, I think they might have to move to a larger venue because, let's see, one building, the exhibit hall was in one building with the panels scattered throughout the rooms. They branched into a couple of ballrooms and hotels a few blocks away for some of the screening stuff. And one entire hall was dedicated to Artist Alley, which was freaking amazing. It was the biggest Artist Alley I've ever seen. And if you want to see pictures of it, check out my posts on the Forbidden Panel website while I was at the convention. But you got to remember, a lot of these artists, a lot of the comic book artists are from the New York area. So this is short hop for them. This is home. They're on their home turf. So showing up and setting up a booth in Artist Alley to peddle their wares isn't really a big thing. It was really cool, though, to see that many artists all gathered in that one space.
Sounds like they showed more respect to Artist Alley here than they do in San Diego.
Yeah, Artist Alley in San Diego is a crime in comparison. I don't know how many artists... Well, I don't know what San Diego charges for a booth in Artist Alley either, though. So that might be the breaking point there, the deciding factor.
I believe it's a comparable price.
It's like if you've got to pay for the travel all the way to San Diego to begin with, plus you're paying through the nose for a booth, an Artist Alley booth, then it might not be cost-effective for you at that point. So, I don't know. But I know if I was on my home turf and it was, you know, easy gig to get press, sell some stuff, spend some time meeting my fans, it would be worth it to me.
So, out of all the conventions that you've been to recently, what's your favorite?
Oh, jeez, man, I don't know. After a while, they kind of start running together. So, they're fresh for a couple of weeks afterwards. And then I see stuff, like when I was walking the exhibit hall, I'm like, hey, I've seen that before. But did I see it in Phoenix? Or did I see it in Anaheim? Did I see it in San Diego? Where did I see that? Let's see. I'm trying to think. San Diego has gotten to be a real circus. I mean, there's all manner of stuff that goes on there, and it's great, but it's a circus. It's just insane, and the stress of it kind of takes some of the fun out of it. Phoenix was too damn hot. I was surprised by how many people turned out for Celebration. I don't know. I think it's kind of a toss-up between this one and WonderCon for me. I think I may have actually enjoyed this one more than I enjoyed WonderCon.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It makes more sense, though. Sometimes traveling is half the adventure and half the allure of a convention. You're right in that Phoenix was really damn hot, but the three of us driving out there to Phoenix and being in a different state, you know, for me, that made it worthwhile. That was a lot of fun for me.
Phoenix was a fun time. It's just it was too damn hot. And, you know, I had that day where I hiked down to the convention center, like, 2 miles and got down there and didn't have my badge and hiked back and then spent the entire day walking around the convention center. So
yeah, but see, that was your bed.
Yeah, but it goes against the convention as a whole, damn it.
And but it shouldn't.
Anime Expo was fun, but that's just me being an anime geek. And part of my issue is that it's, you know, Anime Expo USA, and I'm one of those people that keeps up with stuff as it's released in Japan, so it's like, okay, I knew about this a year and a half ago. Why are you showing it to me now? But I don't know. WonderCon or New York, it's kind of hard to say. Plus, this was my first trip to New York since I was like 8 years old. So that may be biasing my opinion a little bit, getting to experience the city for the first time as an adult, plus go to the convention and geek out over things. It's, you know, it's going to skew the opinion there a little bit.
Oh, very well. Hopefully, maybe sometime at the end of the year, you can put together a collection of ratings of your convention experience, like which one you thought was the best to last.
I can remember all the conventions and differentiate them in my head by the end of the year.
Right.
But that's enough for New York Comic Con. I wrote up stuff for you guys, too, so check out the articles I wrote at the FP website. And AJ, you've got something to talk about, don't you?
On the last episode of the panel cast, I did a review of Ready Player One by Ernest Cline. I had nothing but absolute love and adoration for this book, so much so that when I recommended it to Anthony, he inhaled the whole book in a day.
Yes, I did.
Well, I made the mistake of moving on to his second book, known as Armada. Now, I can't really go into too much detail about Armada, only to say that the way Ernest Cline writes, he writes in such a manner to where it appeals to every little tidbit of geekdom within all of us, and so many different references and familiar storylines and stuff that his writing is like a nice, warm, comfortable blanket on a snowy day. It's just easy to get enveloped into the stories and be familiar with the stories without having to overthink things.
And just to clarify, he doesn't want to go into details because he's trying to avoid ruining it for me because I am currently reading Armada.
Well, I'm gonna say some things. Okay. I'm gonna say some things.
Yeah, because you know they want to hear it. They want to hear you geek out over it. They want to hear the love.
Basically, Armada is a compilation of The Last Starfighter and Ender's Game, the book, not the movie.
Very important distinction.
Right. As well as a little bit of Macross, just a little bit of every sci-fi film out there. Basically, it's about this kid who works at a video game store, is a social outcast, doesn't have a lot of friends, just two, and what they do all the time is online game. They online game this game called Armada. Well, then an alien invasion happens and he gets recruited into the Earth Defense Forces and so on and so forth. It moves on. You can only imagine where it goes from there. Again, cross between Last Starfighter and Ender's Game, the book. Having said that, I loved this book as much as I loved Ready Player One. So much so that when I was finished with the book, I started crying. Openly in public at Starbucks, fuck you, Ernest Cline. Because of the subject matter. I was able to relate to some of the subject matter that he had written about and stuff that was coming up toward the end. So I really was able to respect and appreciate everything he wrote. My only complaint is that, really, dude, two books? That's all you got? What the fuck am I supposed to do now?
Give him time. Give him time. Come on, man. How long do you give George R. R. Martin to release a new Game of Thrones book?
I don't read that motherfucker, and that's why, because it takes him forever. It's like it's the same reason I stopped reading the Dark Tower series after book two, because I knew that waiting in between was going to be the death of me and frustrate me and make me more angry. So I waited until the entire Dark Tower series was finished before reading it. And it's... Now, I mean, unfortunately, these books aren't part of a series. They're independent storylines and whatnot. But, you know, I want more. Give me more. I don't like you. Now, I won't say... It's hard to determine whether or not I liked Armada better than Ready Player One. I think it's because I had read Ready Player One first that maybe I like it a lot more and have elevated it to the top 10 of my favorites. But... who knows what it would have been like had I read Armada first. Either way, Armada is still a good book in comparison. It's pretty much the same genre, just a different outtake, a different look at it. And a not so futuristic look. So I really liked it, and like I said, the subject matter was good enough that I cried at the end. And so if you're a fan of Ready Player One, or if you have not picked up either one of these books, then you should. Ready Player One is more Johnny Mnemonic style, more William H. Gibson style story. I don't want to say storytelling, but you know, the universe created inside of it feels like that. Whereas Armada is more science fiction, spaceships and aliens attacking and stuff like that. The Explorers, Last Starfighter. I even watched Last Starfighter after I was done with the book because I was already, my mind was already in that universe.
Last Starfighter, no Iron Eagle?
You know, I was thinking about Iron Eagle. But I didn't get there yet.
Yeah, as I'm making my way through this, I'm like, it's been a long time. Maybe I need to go back and watch Iron Eagle again.
Right.
That's one of the fantastic things about Klein's writing is that all of it, it's stuff I grew up with. It's throwing me back to happy memories of earlier times and making me want to relive that stuff, making me want to fish that stuff out of the cabinets and out of the closets and be like, I need to re-experience this stuff one more time. So, yeah, it's just, all right. This means you're adding another book to everyone's must-read list.
I don't. My brother-in-law posted a photo of how he got a new Lego hoverboard. Except the photo was on top of his copy of Ready Player One. And I ignored everything else about the photo. I was like, oh, Ready Player One is awesome. You need to read Armada. And he's like, I just barely started Ready Player One. He had listened to the previous podcast, I'm guessing. But yeah, guys, it's Ernest Klein, man. So far, he's doing a great job. And I'm excited to see what more he's writing. Because of his style and the books that I had read, they had felt like such a throwback to things that made me comfortable in my life. I have now researched and found all those hidden, missing Harry Dresden stories, like the Bigfoot trilogy and Mean Streets and what have you. And that's what I'm reading now because I'm in a comfort zone. So, but I may pick up a new book, a new series to start on, and then we can talk about it on the next panelcast or a future panelcast, that is. So, yeah, if Anthony has nothing else he has to say.
I have many things to say, but nothing pertinent to this conversation.
Then we will go ahead and take our final break. We'll be right back, guys.
Hey, guys, this is Dan.
And this is Jen.
We're your hosts on The Road Ahead.
Add us on Facebook and find out about some of the interesting, odd, and amazing places you can visit on your next road trip.
Just go to www.facebook.com/The Road Ahead Series. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Road Ahead Series or simply follow us at Road Ahead Series.
Thanks, and we'll see you on The Road Ahead. Now back to the panel cast.
All right, everybody, welcome back. And it is that time again. That sad, sad, revolting time. It is the end of another panel cast. So, we've given you all we had to give, and then some, and then some more.
And then we made some shit up.
Yeah, but we always do that, so that's nothing new. So, so where will we be? Where can they find us?
Well, coming up in the next 2 weeks on October 30th, 31st, and November 1st, you can find us at Stan Lee's Kamikaze at the LA Convention Center. Yay! We'll be down there at booth U, as in uniform, 15. Sitting there, peddling our wares, doing our best, trying to reach that comic book dream. So we do sincerely invite you guys to come on down and visit us down there. Mention that you listen to the panel cast, and we'll give you a free goodie or two. Come down and mention that Anthony is your favorite host, and you will get your ass kicked. No, I'm just kidding. Anthony will let you take home one of his dreads. It'll be awesome.
You're insane.
So come on down. That's booth U15 at Stan Lee's Kamikaze. Halloween weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Should be a whole lot of fun. Coming up in the next few weeks, we have another episode of Artist Spotlight, where I will be talking to Daniel Whitfield, the artist and creator behind The Plagued. That should also be fairly cool. So yeah, that's about all we got going on for right now.
All right. So everybody, you know, you're listening to this episode of the Panel Cast, but don't forget to hit up the Forbidden Panel website, check out the Instagram feed, find us on Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, all the social media outlets known to mankind. And for AJ, this is Anthony. Come back and join us in a couple of weeks.
PanelCast is brought to you by Forbidden Panel. Please visit us at www.forbiddenpanel.com.